Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Thursday Morning MV Pro Call. Today is October 24th, and I'd like to welcome those of you that are here live, as well as those of you listening to this via recording, which, of course, you can do by going to Google Podcast and down and subscribing to Motor Vitality. You can also do that on Apple Podcast, or you can go to MotorVitality.com, where you will notice we are uploading them much, much, much quicker and regularly. Thanks to one of our newest team members, Jerry, that is putting those up on a weekly basis and getting them up there pretty good. So that's been pretty awesome. So you can listen to those. But we do love having you on live. And some of you can't make it, but we do appreciate the conversation and the live discussion. Anyway, I'm going to start the call off the way I do every week, which is by asking, is there anything anybody learned this last week that you wish you had known before? Anything that happened that's worthy of sharing with other professionals across the country, or anything we can help you with? Anybody have anything?
I had something, but I already forgot what it was.
All right.
So I might stop right in the middle and say, oh, wait, I remember.
This is what happens when you react on the time zone, doesn't it?
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
So let me – what's that?
I said I'll remember it. I'll get back to you guys.
So – well, I don't want to spend a lot of time on this one, but I did want to just give a shout out to Google Alerts again. Those of you that have been on this call regularly in the past, you know about Google Alerts. Both Jen and I talk a lot about them, but if you're not familiar with them, then you can go onto Google, just Google Alerts, and it'll tell you exactly how to do it. And you can put keywords in. And every day or week or whenever it's relevant, Google will scour the internets for the keywords that you put in. And so I've got probably 20 of them set up for different manufacturers, for clients. When I was in sales, I used to put them on for competitors so that I would know what was going on with my competitors, in addition to any news stories that popped up about us or our manufacturer or anything like that. But yesterday I had a news story come across for one of the local clients that we have, and it's just, talking about even the municipal water and just all the contaminants that they were, that they have found in this water supply. And recommendations on how to treat it and talking about things the city was going to be doing to address it and fix it and how they got in there. And, I'm not a big fan at all, of course. You guys are aware of this, I think, that I don't like using scare tactics. I don't think we need to. But when you have the media that makes the case for us, that goes out there and puts down the facts, and we're going to get calls. We need to know about this stuff. I remember one of the most, embarrassing things that I ran into was locally. Both Jen and I had been, when the Flint issue first started, way before it was a lead issue. And for those, some of you may not remember, but the very first issue in Flint was not lead. It was Legionella, and because when they first switched the water lines, they were getting Legionella coming out of the water. So their answer to that was to superchlorinate it, and you had a ton of news stories about TCMs, which is a byproduct from chlorine, and both Jen and I had been out of the area working with other clients, and I frankly hadn't been paying attention a lot I mean, that news story happened so fast. It's Legionella, and then it was, you know, and it was very political. And I hadn't really followed a lot of it. And we were at a home show working with a client in Novi. We happened to go work with him, and somebody walked up and asked, what's going on with the Flint water? And I had no idea. I'm local. You know, Flint turned into this huge thing. And me, somebody who's supposed to be aware of what's happening in the industry and what's going on and all of that stuff, I had no idea. I hadn't even heard anything. So I get on my phone and I put in a couple keywords and I look at some of the Google alerts, and I'll be daggone if those things weren't just like, it was all over the place. I'm like, holy crap, how did I walk into this home show not knowing about these issues, you know, not knowing this was going on? And so, I mean, this was several years ago, and I hopefully have learned that lesson, and I really try and take a moment at least to scan the headlines. There's a lot of them that come through, and I try and at least scan the headlines to be aware of what's happening, you know, with the relevant clients that I have. But for those of you on this call, I strongly encourage, if you've not done so, to sign up for these Google alerts and read them and know what's happening in your area, know what's going on so that you're aware, so that you don't, I mean, we need to be professional, and our customers in times like this are going to come to us and they're going to ask us questions. They're going to see something on the news and they're going to ask us questions. And if we're not prepared with an answer of what's happening in our local area, how are they going to see us as anything more than just salespeople? You know, so we really need to stay prepared and stay aware. And so shout out to Google Alerts on that. Jen, did you remember what you were going to talk about?
I did. I did remember. And, you know, I remember that too, Kelly, because you and I, like you said, we were like 2 or 3 weeks that we were out of town straight. And then I went to the home show and somebody looked at the tea demo and they said, oh, is that water from Flint? And yeah. I'm like, oh, okay, yeah. And then I turned to, thank goodness, I was standing there with April, who was one of our MV pros, and when I turned to her, I'm like,
she
what are they
about
talking
it, yeah.
about? And she's like, you don't know? And I'm like, yeah. So yeah, and again, I was not reading my Google alerts. But anyway, so what I did remember was I had a girlfriend of mine that called up, and she said, she asked me, she says, hey, my housekeeper called up, or my cleaning lady, she called me up and said, I don't think your water softener is working because I'm fighting a lot more water stains and you're getting some rust coming through. She says, so what do I do? What should I do? So I talked her through, you know, do you have salt? Do you have this? And I says, how old is your water softener? And she says, I don't know. It was in here when I moved into the house 15 years ago. And she says, and it looks pretty old. And she sent me a picture, and it was something, I'd say it was probably, it was 15, 20 years old. And so I said, well, you know, it might be time to replace it. Cause she started talking about how she uses up so much salt and things like that. And I said, well, it might be time to replace it, and gave her a couple of recommendations on who to call. So we talk about building relationships. And, you know, if you can get in with house cleaning companies or individual house cleaners, because a lot of people do it just on their own, you know, that is an excellent relationship to build. Talk to them about what to look for, things like that. Talk to them about you and your company and start building a relationship there because, I mean, shoot, who's the number one person that usually sees if a water softener isn't working properly? It's whoever's cleaning the bathtubs or the toilets or things like that. So just a thought.
No, definitely. It's trihalomethanes, by the way. I was trying to bring a cramp on that. So THM was, I don't know what I was thinking, like Turner Classic Movies, TC, and I don't know what I was thinking, but THMs, trihalomethanes, which is a byproduct of chlorine. It was early morning brain cramp there. Early morning, 8:30. Yeah, that's I just rolled out of bed in time for the MV Pro call. So anybody else have anything or thoughts on that before we hop into our topic today, which is, yay, story time with Kelly is what it's going to be today. It's going to be fun. Let's all sit around. Anybody else have anything? Anything you want to add to the introduction here? So, I had a couple instances this week working with another client that I was reminded of these issues, these stories. And, you know, it's funny how sometimes in life, and I don't know if you guys are this way or not, but it happens with me. There are these unexpected instances, these tiny little moments where they can provide long life lessons, long-term life lessons. And, you know, I think there's excellent opportunity to learn from just about everything. But I was reminded this week in working with this client, we had a customer that called because they needed annual service. And they emailed about the annual service. And in the email, they made mention of one of the service technicians that had gone out last year to do the service and had had a lot of issues. There had been a leaky component and some salt spilled and just some things that can happen. I don't think it was anything neglectful. I think some of it was a lack of knowledge of the equipment. I happen to know the service tech is somebody who really puts forth a lot of effort and cares a lot for the customers and would never, you know, it didn't feel like it was a neglect thing. It felt like it was just an experience and kind of an accidental thing, and that can happen. You know, sometimes those customers are really unforgiving. Sometimes they can just be really, you know, they're just nasty about it. And I think you probably approach that a little differently. But in this instance, the customer said, you know, maybe confer with the service tech before he or somebody else comes out to make sure we don't run into those issues again. And this reminded, I loved the way the customer worded it. You know, they said maybe it, you know, if somebody else is coming out, make sure that other person has learned from what the person last year went out learned, you know, and I thought about, this is going to sound a little strange in terms of how it relates, but back when I had hair, way back when, in my freshman year of college, I used to go to JCPenney back when they had a salon there, and I would always go to JCPenney to get my hair cut. And there was this one stylist that I went to regularly. I don't think initially because she was kind of cute and I was why not? but I went to her a couple times. I think probably the first time I went there, it was just a crapshoot on who you get, you know, but after going there for two or three times, she had been cutting my hair. And after a couple times of going there, she accidentally snipped my ear and it bled like crazy. I mean, it you know, she just cut it and it just bled and bled and bled. And she was so apologetic and couldn't believe that she'd done it. It was, you know, obviously not an intentional thing. It was just a slip and maybe I'd move my head or whatever. But she felt really bad about it. Prior to that, she'd done a really good job on cutting my hair. It was back then I was, you know, I had my mullet and my long hair. So this was the 80s. So, you know, you got to have a mullet looking good. You know, you just can't have a bad haircut mullet. But some of you understand, I think, on this call. Anyway, she felt horrible about it. When I went back to get my hair cut the next time, I determined, and this was not just because she was cute anymore, but I intentionally went back and scheduled my appointments with the same stylist, the same person that had cut my ear. And my logic with that, and maybe it's a little strange to think this, but my thought was, if ever there was a person least likely to ever cut my ear again, it would be this person who obviously did a good job and simply made a mistake. I felt like she would be extra, extra, extra careful to not make that mistake again. Now, if she made it twice, if she did it twice, that's a completely different issue, right? Maybe there's a little incompetence there, but I didn't sense that. I sensed that this person had the skill and the desire to do a good job. It was simply a mistake. And so I figured that the likelihood of that mistake being made, especially with me again, would be pretty low. I felt actually safer with this person. And so how does that relate to the issue with the service tech? Let's not just, you know, everybody makes mistakes. If there's any of you on this call that hasn't, you know, been cast the first stone, right? Hopefully we learn from them. Hopefully we have an opportunity to make up for it. You know, in my experience, people are forgiving of mistakes as long as you admit to it, learn from it, don't make excuses. And the thing is, we want to give – so we sent this service tech back out to this customer and this client. This is the service tech that we scheduled to go back out. And I had this discussion with him before we sent him back out. I know that this customer is not only not going to have that mistake again, but I know that this service tech is going to give this customer just blown away wow service to try and make up for it. And that, in the long run, is going to help the confidence of the service tech. It's going to not lock us into, you know, we don't want to be limited on who we can schedule to go do a service call either, right? That sort of, that creates logistical problems in scheduling and things like that. We don't want those customers that say, I mean, we want them, but we don't want to have people on our team that customers just don't want to their house for some reason. You know, we want every member of our team to be able to go out and serve every one of our customers. Of course, there's different experience levels, and you try not to put somebody in a situation that they don't know, you know, that's going to exacerbate the likelihood of those mistakes occurring. I mean, you've got to, you know, training's important. But let's give, you know, each other and our team members a chance to grow and learn and provide that wow service. What do you guys think of that? What are your thoughts? And give me some feedback on this. So you guys are still like reeling with the picture of me having a mullet.
We always do that. If a service guy makes a mistake, we send the same guy back out to correct it.
And does it seem like an opportunity for the service tech, or is it you screwed it up, you fix it type thing? Or do you present it in a way that it's a positive, that's an opportunity? You know, how do the service techs view going back out? Do they look forward to those opportunities, or do they do they
depends on which service manager we've had at the time.
Right.
The new one is very positive. I can't say the previous one was as positive. We used to be really good, and they don't track, or they don't at least post it anymore. They used to post in the warehouse the guys' callbacks. And you know, so and whoever had the least callbacks for a month got some kind of a prize or whatever.
Yeah.
But it was a way to try to motivate them to do it right the first time.
Yeah.
And if they got called back a second time on the same job, that was not good.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We've got a lot of clients that track that and keep track. And there is a lot of cost associated with having to go back out and do callbacks.
Mm-hmm.
Too. I mean, you don't get paid for that thing. It basically doubles the cost of the service call if you have to go back out and do something. So it definitely makes sense to incentivize doing it right the first time. You know, a lot of clients have checklists and that type of thing. So, and that's, you know, that delves, what you're kind of talking about delves into a different, I guess, management style or approach in doing it, you know, so, and which is almost a whole, you know, different call. But who else? What else? What other feedback do you guys have? What are your thoughts on that? So let me delve into the second story that I wanted to tell. Oh, goody! It's a twofer. It's like a double feature Kelly story call. This is I know you guys are on the edge of your seats. What story is going to be now? What's he going to say now? I used to wait tables and bartend quite a bit when I was in college. And the first job I got ever waiting tables was at Red Lobster, a little seafood restaurant you guys may have heard of. But that was my the first restaurant I ever waited tables at. And of course I had to go through the training where I had to, you know, work in the kitchen for a couple of weeks and do that. Most good places do that. They kind of have you do the jobs. I've told the story of Outback before, Outback Steakhouse, when I worked there for a while when I first moved to Michigan and was, you know, kind of looking for another job. This was even after college, and you know, at Outback, I had spent 2 months working as a busboy in the kitchen and as a dishwasher. They made you spend 2 months before, even as an experienced server, they made you do every single job, no matter how big or small, before you got to wait tables. Everybody had to do that, you know, just all the way through. But at Red Lobster, it was just a couple weeks, and actually, I could have used the training because I, you know, there you work for a week or two in the back, you know, prepping the food and doing that stuff, and then you have to follow around the server for a while and you know, kind of shadow them and kind of learn how to do it. But my very first day on my own, completely on my own, I was so determined to give, you know, I just tips were, you get tips. And to me, I kind of loved the gig. You know, it was like the better you wow people with service, the more money you make. It's a pretty simple concept, right? You make them really, really happy and they give you more money. That's kind of a good, I like that gig. And so I really went out of my way to give, you know, to really stay organized and give good, you know, to attention to detail, just doing those little things that would kind of stand out. And I remember one of the very first tables, this was literally the very first day I was on my own, that one of the first tables I had, at the end of the meal, I had it was a four top, so four people at the table, and this guy who was paying the bill, he says to me, you did a nice job, what do you want for a tip? And I said, what do you guys think I said? The customer asked me what I wanted for a tip. What did I say? What do most servers think I deserve? Yeah, that's exactly. Well, that's up to you. You know, whatever you feel is appropriate, right? And the guy said to me something. This has been a life lesson that I think is worthy of sharing on, since we're talking about stories and those little things that are life lessons. The guy said to me, he said, there are very few opportunities you're going to have in your life where you have an opportunity to determine your own worth. He said, very few times people are going to ask you to determine your own worth. And if you, when those moments occur, say to them, whatever you think I'm worth, then you're only ever going to be worth what other people think you're worth. And so when those opportunities occur, take advantage of it and be realistic. You know, don't say something that, I mean, you have to be honest about how you kind of judge yourself. But if you think that, if I thought at that moment that I had given superb service, then why would I ask or be okay with an average tip? You know, and so this has been something that the way I kind of have related this to sales and actually in my career and you know, we've worked with clients and we've looked at what we're worth and what we do. If I believe that I've given really excellent service or provided a really high quality service, then I shouldn't be afraid to ask for an above average price or fee or reward for that service. And I want to kind of turn that back around into sales in terms of how we're closing, because there are a lot of really, You know, those of you that have known me for a while know that I'm not a big fan of the yuck, backslappy, pushy, got to buy something from me right now salesperson. I believe very strongly that sales should be far more about giving than taking. And both Jen and I, when we look for sales professionals, when we often look for people without a lot of sales experience, somebody that we can kind of teach to understand about the giving concept, you know, and we teach that part. Unfortunately, one of the things that's hard to get people to do is to ask for the sale. You know, those people, they're nice. They're really nice, and they feel that awkward, you know, when it comes time to, you know, to close, they go, well, you know, it just feels uncomfortable. I don't want to push them into buying it and everything. Well, here's what I want to remind you of. If you believe that you and your company can give superior service, superb service, and so much of that is guided by you, and frankly, if you don't believe that about your company, then maybe you should explore what company you're with. Okay, do it now while the unemployment's low, unemployment rate's low. And I'm not encouraging anybody to quit or go anywhere. Please don't misunderstand me there. But if you're not absolutely 100% proud of what you're selling or what you're presenting, maybe it's time to really sit down and do a thorough analysis over what that is. And I'm not just saying pack up and leave and go work somewhere else. I'm saying, is there something, look first and see if there's something that you can do to contribute to make it better, okay? I mean, don't just pick up and run, because I promise you, you're not going to work anywhere that you're 100% satisfied with or 100% happy with. There are going to be headaches and problems every single place you go to work. And the difference between a professional and just a you know, somebody working a job is that a professional is going to step up, take ownership, and do what they can to make it better. You know, they're where they're at. But if you truly believe the intent is there, the quality of your product is there, the service is there, all of those things, then don't, you know, people go, well, I can buy it for less money over there. Well, yeah, but that's an average system, okay? If what you have is superior, don't be afraid to ask for a superior price or a superior fee. And I mean, what's the worst that's going to happen? When I was waiting tables and the guy says, what do you want for a tip? Well, I think I deserve at least 30%. What's the worst that's going to happen? That guy's going to go, no, I don't think so. I disagree. In which case, I might be able to have a discussion with him and say, okay, what could I have done differently that would make it worth 30%? But more times than not, what I found is that if I gave superior service, then I did tend to get superior tips. And when those occasions came up where people asked, or where I had an opportunity to ask for a superior tip and I asked for it, I got it. I got it because I believe so strongly in that I deserved it, you know? And you have to be honest with yourself, right? Don't expect a superior income if you're not giving superior service or product, okay? But also, don't be afraid if you have done all of those things above average. You have done it professionally and knowledgeably. Don't be afraid to ask for that sale, to ask for the opportunity to help them. There's nothing wrong with that. You deserve it. And if you can't get over that, again, maybe this isn't the right profession for you. I know that sounds, I'm not saying to you guys, I don't want anybody in this call to come to like hang up and send me an email going, you know, that was really good. I quit. I just quit my job. Thanks for that advice. You know, no. Getting like, you know, owners calling me. That's the last time I ever let my person listen to your call. You made this guy quit. Please don't do that. Stay, make it better. But also don't be afraid to ask for the opportunity to help people and to ask for a premium if you've done a good job at it. Okay, thoughts. Last couple minutes here. What are your thoughts on that? On Kelly story number two.
I honestly think that that's one of the biggest fallbacks, or not fallback, one of the biggest concerns that sales professionals have is asking for that sale, especially if you're selling a high end. And the confidence, I think, is the most important thing, you know, is to go in and truly believe in what you sell and truly believe in yourself selling it. So I totally agree with that. Don't be afraid to ask for the sale. There is a reason that they have you there. If they can't afford it, maybe there's another option that you can get them into. And if not, then you tried your best. Again, what's the worst they can say is no.
Yeah, and are we offended if they say no? Hopefully not. You know, all you can do is offer what you have, you know. Any other thoughts on that? These are an active group this morning.
They're so mesmerized by story time.
Yeah, by my stories. It's like, oh, do we have time for another one, please? Oh, look at the time. We don't. Sorry, guys. I would love to hear your life-changing anecdotes. You know, shoot me an email. Give me a call on the side. I'd love to hear if there's something like that had an impact on you kind of lifelong, those little life lessons, you know. I guess the final thing is try and find a lesson as you go, you know, through each day. Try and learn a little. I mean, it really is amazing what you can learn from the smallest experiences. And, you know, hopefully it helps all of us kind of improve a little bit. So hope you guys took something out of this call. We are out of time. Next week, of course, is Halloween, so scary. I expect everybody to come on the call wearing a costume. So it's a costume party call. That'd be fun. Everybody be safe. We will talk to you next weekend or next week, if not before. And I appreciate it, everybody. Thanks very much.
Take care.